This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. St. Louis is often called a big, small town. And in a place like this, people with big hearts tend to make a difference in others' lives. One person with a big heart was Linda Lockhart. Born in St. Louis in 1952, Linda was a well-respected journalist with a more than 40-year career. Over the course of that career, she worked for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the St. Louis Beacon, St. Louis Public Radio, and the St. Louis American. And in the 1970s, she helped found the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists, which is now the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists. Linda died on Sunday at the age of 72 from complications with cancer. In a moment, we'll talk with someone who knew her and was mentored by her. But first, we want to listen back to a conversation we did with Linda on this show in 2019 when she retired from St. Louis Public Radio. She spoke with our now executive producer, Alex Hoyer, and he first asked what was on her mind as she was nearing retirement.
I think about all the changes that I've seen that have come in the industry, all the great opportunities I've had, the wonderful people I've met, the things that I have learned. I think throughout the years I've always said the reason I like this business is because I get to learn something new every day. And that's been true. I mean, even today, the things that last story I edited earlier about Alzheimer's disease and how it affects African Americans, there were things that I kind of knew but I didn't know, and it was just very interesting. And to be able to share that information with people and tell stories is something that I've just always wanted to be a part of, so I feel very thankful that I've had this opportunity.
What was it like when you entered the business?
Back in the dark ages. Well, I walked into the Post-Dispatch newsroom in the summer of 1974 when there were still spittoons. There were guys that had spittoons by their desks and, you know, chewed snuff. And there were other guys that had bottles of hard alcohol in their bottom drawer. And the telephones were ringing and the AP bell was dinging. And there was just noise and people yelling and calling out for Copy Boy to come and get their stories and take them over from the reporters to the editors. And now we're in this room that's so quiet. And people are like, oh, I'm trying to work. I can't think. Can you guys keep it down over there? And it's like, you know, I learned how to tune things out. I mean, we were on manual typewriters that were going that clack, clack, clickety, clack, tap, tap with people that type with two fingers or one finger. I had typing class in high school, so I kind of knew how to type. But, you know, I went from typewriters to computers and now digital. You know, I remember people talking here about recording on tape and editing the tape, but we don't have tape anymore. It's
but
all
people
just,
still say it.
They still say it, exactly. So there weren't a lot of I came in, you know, in the 70s when there were growing numbers of women coming into the newsroom. There were growing numbers of people of color, African Americans, especially in St. Louis. So I did see a good opportunity of diversity in the newsroom. I came in at a good time, I think, there. But unfortunately, I almost feel like a lot of news agencies are sliding back the other direction. I feel fortunate to have been able to work here at St. Louis Public Radio, which has a very diverse workforce compared to others. We could certainly do more. And as we continue to hire and grow, we see opportunities to keep our workforce reflective of our community. And I think that's a very important thing in telling stories of the people around us. We all can learn, and certainly I learned lots of stories about people who weren't like me. So it's not saying that certain groups of people can only cover their own groups, because obviously, you know, I went and covered issues that in South St. Louis County and Jefferson County and Franklin County that had nothing related to my personal experience in the lives of the people there, but I told their stories. And so now when I see a young white reporter who's maybe sent off into an African-American neighborhood and feels a little anxious about it, you know, I think back about, you know, nobody held my hand when they sent me off to that farmer and asked me to interview him about down in Waterloo, Illinois, about having an airport come and cover up his field. It would never happened, but the airport never happened, but I had to go down there and talk to farmers, and, you know, they were going to lose their soybean fields. So I enjoyed learning those kind of things. I think when I first got into public media and public radio was when I was living in Minnesota. I worked for the newspaper in the Twin Cities, and I began to listen to Minnesota public radio. And when I first heard a story about fly fishing in North Dakota, and I had a driveway moment where I just got caught up in the storytelling. And again, I learned something new, and I was able to just sit there and listen. And I may never go fly fishing in North Dakota, but it was a good story. It was well told, and it held my interest. And that's what I've always liked about public media, is that they tell stories that maybe they relate to me, maybe they don't, but they inform me and help me understand more about the greater world. So I feel fortunate now to be able to work at this institution.
You were talking about representation and diversity in newsrooms and mentioned that you think that we may have regressed a little bit in terms of, and this is media as a whole. What leads you to believe that?
Well, it's the studies by the American Association of Newspaper Editors, ASNE, that set out a call back in the 1970s that we wanted to have parity in newsrooms and have newsrooms reflect the communities that they live in, and they're nowhere close. In fact, when they asked for updated reporting, many newsrooms around the country didn't even bother to answer the questions. Newspapers have downsized considerably and have laid people off. People have been frustrated. There have been people who have worked in news organizations who have felt that they have been discriminated against within those institutions and not given a fair chance, not treated equally, and have left the business. There's not the same push in schools. You know, when I went to journalism school at the University of Missouri in Columbia, it was because of a designated scholarship from the Post-Dispatch because they wanted to grow their own minority population of reporters because they recognized they didn't have any reporters of color, or very, very few, and wanted to start making sure they had quality candidates and quality, well-trained reporters. That scholarship program no longer exists, okay? And there are great people that came through that program. There are people like Gerald Boyd, who rose up to become managing editor of the New York Times. There are other many people that have come out of different programs like that, but those programs now we feel like, well, we don't need them anymore. The door is open. People can come if they're qualified, and if they're not, so be it. So the challenge is that the news industry is very attractive to a lot of people across all ethnicities, but at the same time is downsizing. There are just fewer jobs available. People are concerned about going to smaller communities. We always were told as students, you know, you may not make it at the big city right away. Go to a smaller market. Go to a smaller community. But then again, you're going to be more isolated and more alone and have more challenges if you're a person of color. And some people just don't, that doesn't fit for their lifestyle, that they just realize that this is not the way it's going to work for me. So somehow I feel like there have been progress in many ways, but in other ways, it's like the emphasis is like gone. I mean, there's always been this sort of backlash of, oh, you're only there because you're fitting a minority chair, you're really not qualified. That's always been on my shoulder and is on the shoulder of young people yet today, that the things our parents told us about having to be twice as good to get half as far still remains, and now we have a new generation of people that are impatient and don't feel like that this still applies to them. If you look at television, you know, you might think, well, it's all great because many of our local television stations appear to be fully integrated. But then we still get to the important jobs of who's making the decisions, who are the editors in the editor's chairs, who are deciding what stories get covered, how much space and time those stories are. And those seats are still predominantly filled by white people, mostly white males. And so the decisions are still being made not by the people whose lives are affected and whose stories are being told, but those that are sitting at the top of the food chain.
During your time at St. Louis Public Radio, which has been just a little more than 5 years, you've done copy editing for us and engagement with our listeners. But you mentioned doing a story in Waterloo. What was the bulk of your career, maybe for the first 2 decades?
When I came out of journalism school, I went to the Post-Dispatch, as I said, as a newly minted reporter. And I did GA, which, you know, meant whatever was going on in the course of the day, general assignment. I became the night police reporter, which opened my eyes to this underbelly of crime in St. Louis, which was also very challenging. Police are good men, good women, good people that keep us safe every day. But sometimes they never really liked reporters very much, and they didn't have any experience with many black reporters or certainly any black women reporters. And so there were times where it was clear they were trying to tease me or goad me or make me have to sort of walk a certain gauntlet to see if I was worthy, if I could not crumble and take me into the interrogation room and show me hard evidence and let's go over and meet in the morgue. We got something we want to show you over there. I mean, really just trying to gross me out and see if I'd run out of the room crying. But again, I'm from St. Louis. I have a lot of pride in my city. And so, again, telling those kind of stories was important to me to find people whose lives were affected by crime. After a few years, I was an education reporter. I covered the St. Louis Public Schools and all the school districts around metropolitan St. Louis in the late 1970s and early 80s, at the time that school desegregation was going into effect, court-ordered busing. So that was a very big story that I covered, just how children are educated, how children are miseducated, the changes in the education system. That's something that still troubles me, that, you know, some 30 years, 40 years after school desegregation, St. Louis Public School children are still having serious difficulties in getting the quality education they deserve. So that's always been a passion of mine. I covered general aviation. I covered small aircraft flying to little airports. I left the Post-Dispatch in the early 80s and went to the Milwaukee Journal, and that's when I began doing my editing. And so I was a copy editor there. Moved to St. Paul, Minnesota, did many different editing jobs there, beginning as a copy editor, but worked my way through the various desks.
And you wound up back in St. Louis when?
Came back to St. Louis in 1997, returned to the Post-Dispatch, so I have bookend career at the newspaper. Returned as a copy editor. They had a position open and called me in to do that. From there, I was Metro section editor, in charge of the section at the Metro News. I worked as an editorial writer for a couple of years and wrote on opinion pieces on the editorial page, which I thought was probably one of the highest honors I have, to be able to have that forum of this is what's happening and this is what I or the institution, the Post-Dispatch, thinks should happen. So it was still reporting, giving the background, setting up a scenario, but then trying to draw a conclusion and trying to help direct people into which way we thought they should go. I also worked on the National International News Desk, which we used to call the old wire desk or telegraph desk, where you pulled in news from around the world, the different news agencies, from the New York Times and the Washington Post, the Times of London or BBC or other news organizations, of stories that people should be able to share. So that was really great. But then newspapers began to decline. There was a wave where the Post-Dispatch was sold to Lee Enterprises, and that's when the layoffs and early retirement and buyouts and things began in the mid-2000, around 2005. In 2007 is when I left the Post-Dispatch and was again very fortunate to continue working with people I had known since I was a high school kid. Margie Freivogel launched the St. Louis Beacon, the online-only news organization, and Margie invited me to come and be part of the Beacon crew. And that was probably the most fun I've had, because we were starting a whole new thing and we had no rules. We just wanted to cover good journalism, tell good stories, and didn't quite know how to do it as an online-only product, but we made the best of it. And we had 5 great years of getting out there and telling what was going on in St. Louis. And so when the time came for the transition and the merger with Public Radio, it was still an opportunity for me to keep learning new things. And still, I tell people, I say, I'm still telling stories, just finding new ways to do it.
Is there a highlight story that you can recall from your 4-decade-plus career?
Early on, there was, unfortunately, St. Louis still continues to have a lot of crime and difficulties. And early on, I was sent to cover a homicide of a young high school student who had been killed over his jacket. He'd wearing a leather jacket, and he was shot and killed for it. And so I went to the family home, and the family members were there, and they were gathered around grieving. And I went into the house, and I didn't really right away say, "Hi, I'm a reporter from the newspaper." I kind of just, sat there respectfully and quiet and sort of tried to just, blend in. And a little kid came and wanted to sit on my lap, like a toddler, just, wandered up. And it's like, "Oh, okay, I'll hold the baby." And so somebody's like, "Well, who are you? You're not a relative," or whatever. Adults finally recognized me. And, I had finally explained, who I was. And somehow, just the time that I didn't just barge in and pull out my notebook and start interviewing right away, but took time to respect people that were in their grief, they were ready to talk to me. I feel like if I just knocked on the door and said, "Hey, I'm from the newspaper, I want to interview somebody," they might have said, "No, this is not a good time." But the door was open. I went in the house. I sat down. I made friends. And they told me a great story. It was a sad story, but it was a family's story. And I think I tried to do that family justice by telling the story of their lost child.
And you showed them respect.
And I showed them respect. So, you know, I think one point I met President Jimmy Carter, which was very exciting for me. I've been active throughout most of my career with the National Association of Black Journalists, and I held national office. I was national secretary back in the 1970s. I'm a founder of the St. Louis chapter of Black Journalists here, which has, again, had its 40th anniversary a couple of years ago. I feel very honored because we have helped young people through high school journalism workshops, again, to prepare them to go off into, to go to college with the skills they need, to prepare them for internships, prepare them for just how to interview for jobs, all those things. Sort of mentoring young people has been very important to me because I had great mentors that did help me. And so obviously I think it's something that I need to do to keep the next generation ready. So you never want to hear anybody say, we can't find anybody qualified for this job. That's a bunch of crock.
That was longtime St. Louis journalist Linda Lockhart talking with St. Louis on the Air executive producer Alex Hoyer. They spoke in 2019 when Linda retired after working for 5 years at St. Louis Public Radio. Linda died on Sunday at the age of 72. Over her more than four decades-long career, Linda also worked at the St. Louis Beacon, the St. Louis American, and the biggest chunk of her work was at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Our engagement editor, Lara Hamden, talked with Linda's daughter, Rachel Seward. She said that it's not necessarily a specific place or thing that she'll remember the most about her mom.
It was her storytelling. It was how she loved to share, especially stories about our family, her family growing up, her lineage, her heritage. You know, there are wonderful traditions in her family and names that have been passed down. And that was always so important to her, to share someone's full name so that you knew where they came from and who they were named after and why that person was important.
Another person who knew Linda Lockhart well was Margie Freivogel, the longtime St. Louis Post-Dispatch journalist and founding editor of the St. Louis Beacon and former editor at this station, remembers Linda well.
The thing that Linda epitomizes for me is that she had very high standards for herself and for the people around her. And she was very forthright in expressing her insights and opinions, but also doing it in a way that preserved goodwill and relationships over many years and over agreements and disagreements. I think she was better at that than anybody else I've ever known.
And joining us now is St. Louis Public Radio afternoon newscaster Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. She came to know Linda Lockhart in 2017. Marissa Ann, I wish it was under different circumstances that we're talking, but thank you for being here today.
I am so happy to be here.
So one of the things Linda was known for was her driving tours of St. Louis, and she did this with job candidates, with new employees, even out-of-town journalists. You got one of those tours, Marissa Ann. What was it like?
You know, she had constantly been like, okay, you need to know the city. You need to know the city. And we got in her SUV. She drove a stick. And I was like amazed that she could drive it so flawlessly. Mm-hmm. And we went all over the place. And every time I would say a street name, she's like, nope, wrong name. This is how you pronounce it. I'm like, okay. And like, we just kept going. And during this whole like ride, she would like drop random facts. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you know this? And why do you know this information? And she was like, listen, you're going to be covering this community. You need to know this community. And it came across so strong how much she genuinely loved this place. And I have yet to meet a journalist, an editor, a reporter, a photojournalist who loved a city as much as she did. Mm-hmm. And not just the city of St. Louis, but this entire region. And she knew it so well. And half the time I was like, are you sure you're not a historian? Like, why do you know all this stuff?
Right, right.
But it came from experience and it came from genuine love.
Mm-hmm. Linda was also a special kind of mentor to you, Marissa Ann. How was that so?
So, I am trying not to cry. Mm-hmm. But this job would not have been possible. I'm sorry.
No. Take your time.
Every day you get to hear me. Mm-hmm. 5 days a week. Most of the time when things go well.
Right.
And I was very green. I was like 24. Mm-hmm. And I applied for this job. And I didn't get it the first time. And then the second time rolls around. And she's on my hiring committee. Mm-hmm. Didn't know her from a can of paint. But when I came in, she was so kind and she was so warm. And she looked like me. And it was such a moment where I felt so welcomed and embraced by her. And I felt her love. Mm-hmm. And when I got the job and, you know, we started talking more, I learned how hard she fought for me to be here and saw the value in a young reporter who didn't have the experience, you know, that some would have wanted in a candidate. But she saw that there was potential in me. And I remember one of the early stories that I did, she sent me a Slack message and she was copy editing it. And she was like, come here and bring your chair.
Okay.
And line for line, she went over and like, she was a stickler for AP style. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But she wanted it to be my best. And mm-hmm. taking that time, I still have not had a line edit like that for a web story. Yeah. Line for line, literally, you know?
So it was like that tour that she took you on. You were sitting right next to her.
But she cared and she wanted mm-hmm. the best. She wanted the best out of me. Mm-hmm. And years later, lockdown happens and I'm working on a story and I'm like, oh my goodness, I do not know who to turn to for this. And then randomly I thought, you know what, maybe Miss Linda would know. Miss Linda always knows. Next thing I know, she sends me email after email after email with so many sources with range of the decades of these people. And I'm like, Miss Linda, I don't need any more people.
And this was after she retired, right?
Yes, well after retirement, darling. Well after. And she, you know, that was the very first NPR feature I ever did. And without her, it wouldn't have been possible to get all the stories and the voices that I got. And that was just so incredibly special to me that she was like, use me as a resource. I am here. Mm-hmm. If you need me, shout. I'm here.
Yeah.
You know? And that meant so much because not everyone has someone in their corner from the beginning until the end, mm-hmm. shooting and rooting for them to succeed and to thrive.
Yeah.
And what a blessing that was.
Mm-hmm. And in just 10 seconds, what is the image of her that you will always hold in your mind?
A regal queen. A regal queen. Because mm-hmm. only a queen will look out for everybody. Such a giving soul and a giving spirit. Thank you so much, Miss Linda.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.